Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We'll be joined a little after 4:20 this afternoon. Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter, our WWL digital content producer. He'll give us notes from the Saints camp today, and so we'll go to Jeff on some of the info, also maybe some comments made by Dennis Allen. A little after 5:20, Jim Wyatt, who's on Titans Online, he's covered the Titans, I think it's 29 years. He's covered the Tennessee Titans. He'll be on with us to break down the Titans as they play the Saints this coming Sunday, and you can hear that game right here on the Big 870 and also free on the Odyssey app. Before we got some Saints talk, which we'll delve into a lot more with Jeff, a lot of movement across the NFL today, and Charlie, one of the guys, he sort of has bounced around. I told you before, he's the most talented kicker I ever saw at LSU, and that was Cade York, and he gets dealt to the Commanders. Again, man, he's had a checkered career. Oh, I know one thing, Cade can kick it. Bad thing is he hasn't been able to kick it straight in the NFL.
Yeah, so now Washington goes and scoops him up. Similar kind of conditions, right? I don't know. Cade York, I think he was, I don't even want to say unfairly bashed by Cleveland Browns fans, but they were not a fan of him, Mike.
No.
And it's just, it's such a, I guess, fall from grace based off of what he did at LSU. He was one of the best kickers in LSU history. They used a fourth-round draft pick on him, like, for a kicker. That's what we're talking about here. And then he just kind of stunk it up in Cleveland. But now Washington, you know, they're kind of taking a flyer on him. The talent's still there. And they sent over a seventh-round pick to Cleveland in exchange. It's conditional as well, so it might not even be anything. But now Cade York gets a fresh start in Washington.
We'll see how it all works out with Cade, who, again, I thought he sort of lost his confidence kicking in Cleveland. I really think so. Once he started missing a few, man, it got between his ears.
It snowballed.
And that was end of story. Yeah, a couple other big stories. One, A.J. Terrell, former first-round pick from Clemson, signed a four-year extension today, $81 million, which I think it equals out to like $20.25 million a year, which only Jaire Alexander with the Packers is making more money than A.J. Terrell. $81 million deal, $65.8 million in full guarantees on a four-year extension for A.J. One thing I do know, man, they break it into Arthur Blank's checkbook. So this is now the trade for Matt Judon and then
signing Simmons.
Signing Justin Simmons, the safety, and then now coming up with a new deal for A.J. Terrell. And basically, if you listen to Terry Fontenot today, sounds like there might be something else.
Jeez. Yeah, I don't know, Mike. Is A.J. kind of overpaid to you, in your opinion? I think he kind of, maybe slightly, right? Because $65.8 million in guarantees is the largest guarantee ever given to a cornerback on a four-year deal via ESPN's Adam Schefter. And to your point, he's only behind Jaire Alexander for the highest-paid cornerbacks in the league.
In today's world, you might think that way. You might not think that way a year from now or 6 months from now.
Well, just wait for Pat Surtain to reset the market next year, where he's going to have a ridiculous contract from the Denver Broncos. But he's good. But Denzel Ward is up in there. Jalen Ramsey, Marlon Humphrey are all up in this conversation as far as the top five highest-paid cornerbacks. I don't know if AJ's really in the conversation, Mike. But obviously, the Falcons think he is. They gave him a huge extension. And now you're looking at, Schefter also put this out today, big cornerback deals this offseason. Terrell got the biggest one, but also Tyson Campbell signed a major deal. You know, Legarius Sneed signed a huge deal once he got moved on to Tennessee. And then Jalen Johnson signed a big deal as well. You know who's up next, Mike?
It's Paulson
Adebo.
Okay, and this is why we bring it up. We kind of setting the stage because the next guy to win the Powerball on the Saints lineup is going to be Paulson Adebo. And with the signing of Tyson Campbell, and I think the next contract for Adebo will be pretty close to what we see the Jacksonville Jaguars gave Tyson Campbell. It'll be in that range. And I'm sure that's what his agent is saying, too.
Just for reference, Tyson Campbell got a four-year, $76.5 million deal. So if you're looking at what you can kind of expect for Paulson Adebo, as you mentioned, Mike, it should be somewhere around that. And Paulson Adebo, we talked about when you draft and develop a young player, especially like talented young guys that you maybe swing on in the third round. You saw what happened with Trey Hendrickson. You let him walk. He's ended up having a great career in Cincinnati. But with Paulson Adebo, you've developed him. He's turned into a great player on your defense. You got to lock him down long term and reward him, give him that extension that he's looking for. And that's probably around the price tag that you're going to have to pay.
And in another deal, Washington, little patience with a former first-round pick in Jahan Dotson, and they sent him along with a fifth-round pick to the Eagles in exchange for a third-round pick in 2025 and two seventh-round picks. Now, in talking to people who have covered the Commanders, they tell me Warrod is welcome. One thing when you watch Jahan Dotson play with the Commanders, he had difficulties getting off press coverage. If I was playing him first, man, I'd get right up on the line and kind of beat him up a little bit. He really struggled.
He's not the biggest dude in the world, Mike.
And they basically, hey, listen, you physically got to get a little bit stronger, got to learn how to get off that press a little bit quicker with your arms and your hands. Well, you look like the same guy. My thing now is with the deck cleared. Now, Terry McLaurin, he's one of the most underrated players in the NFL. I think it's four straight years, over 70 catches, and over 1,000 yards in receptions that Terry has had for them. They need a kind of Batman-Robin combination here, and he ain't on the roster today.
So I was joking basically last week, Mike, that my dreams of Brandon Ayuk getting moved to the Washington Commanders were kind of dead once it basically came out that the Pittsburgh Steelers had a potential deal in place for him. San Francisco just needed to accept, and then San Francisco had a deal in place for Ayuk, but Ayuk hadn't accepted that contract offer from them, so it was still all kind of up in the air, and it seemed like Washington had kind of moved themselves out of the picture, right? But, you know the Godfather line that we love joking about, they pulled us right back in. Washington could potentially make a deal for Brandon Ayuk and get their wide receiver one to go with Jaden Daniels. And we also mentioned this back when we had first talked about the idea. Jaden Daniels and Brandon Ayuk played with each other in 2019 at Arizona State.
And they work out in the offseason. It was one of the things in talking to Jaden, he kind of felt a real connection with Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
Even when he was at LSU, he felt that connection with him, and the fact that, man, you know, he's your long-term quarterback, most likely.
Oh, for
sure.
With
the Commanders. That if he says, hey, you know, let's make that deal. I don't have a number two today. Now, McCaffrey, they like what they see of him.
But
is he a true number two guy?
And he's a rookie, and you don't want to push him into that role. You want to, in fact, go out and get Ayuk and push him to the wide receiver one role and then move McLaurin to wide receiver two. And then you have a great duo that you can give your young quarterback to help his early development and growth. Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. So moving on from potentially a first-round pick, and I saw, Bootleg Football had put this out on Twitter that maybe that third round pick that they got back from Philly could be used as part of a sweetener.
Swing it.
Yeah, like to kind of help a deal get done. Whereas, you know, if you're San Francisco, you get a first round pick this upcoming year and another top 100 pick with a third round pick from Washington, a day two pick, I think you make that deal. And then if you're Washington, you have to pony up the money to give Brandon Ayuk a long term extension. But once again, you give Jaden Daniels his wide receiver one for the foreseeable future. And it's two guys that are obviously know each other well. They've played together before in college, as we just mentioned. It just makes so much sense to me. And it's starting to kind of fall together a little bit.
We'll see if it ultimately happens. I got to see it to believe it.
Man,
we've rode the roller coaster with Ayuk. He's going to Pittsburgh. He's staying in San Francisco. Oh, he's going to Pittsburgh. Then he's staying in San Francisco. And then now this comes up.
Washington's been kind of the curveball, and they've always been there. They've like kind of been looming because it just makes so much sense. But now, like, you can get a deal done if you really want to. It's all up to the Commanders now.
Yeah, it's up to them to see how they want to kind of finish the deal with this. But the connection long-term in that, you know, again, when you look at Jaden's connection with Ayuk from his Arizona State days, who he worked out with this offseason, Brandon Ayuk. I think he might be in somebody's ear. Now, the Dotson pick is going to catch some heat, but not from this regime. I had a scout for the Commanders tell me that Jahan Dotson pick came from above. Ooh. So to speak.
Yeah, Mr. Snyder.
Danny Snyder wanted Jahan
Dotson.
Who is
no longer in the building.
That he pushed this. And remember that pick, when they traded back, the Saints traded with the Commanders to get up to get Olave.
Yeah.
And their deal was, well, we can get Dotson a little bit later on. And that's how the Saints got Olave, by moving up with the Commanders. And remember the next pick, Detroit picks Jameson Williams from Alabama.
And Jameson, from all accounts, this is a complete side note, is potentially going to have a kind of breakout year in his third year.
We always ain't never going to see no double coverage with who he got on the field.
No, with Amon-Ra St. Brown? No, absolutely not. But as far as a burner that can really stretch your offense, Jameson Williams has always had that talent. It's been the gambling suspension that he had to deal with and also some injuries along the way.
Yeah, the knee injury, which was severe.
A significant knee injury. But as far as Jameson Williams, maybe I'm buying a little bit of stock in him this year.
I think this might be the year for him to really blow up big. When we come back, we'll have on with us Jeff Nowak, our Saints sideline reporter and also our WWL digital content producer. Notes from the Saints practice sessions today, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, our WWL Saints sideline reporter, also our WWL digital content producer, Jeff Nowak. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, guys, good to be here. I'm fully reacclimated to humidity and the Central Time Zone, so I'm feeling good, ready for football.
Yeah, it took a little bit more. The time zone stuff, you get over that much quicker than you will this heat and humidity. But here's the good news, Jeff. You just got two more months of it.
Oh yeah, two more. Yeah, and then you just get a little slightly less of it.
Yeah, just a little bit, because that winter time and fall is all kind of questionable here when that comes in play. Jeff, from everything I've been able to read, Jake Haener had a really good practice session today.
Yeah, I think Jake, I think he's had a rough week or so. I thought both backup quarterbacks really showed well in the first preseason game, and then I think they may have stumbled a bit coming out of the blocks in the second week of the preseason. But I think Jake settled in. He had a really nice stretch. He had probably what I would say was his best kind of team set of camp. I think on three consecutive throws, he had a really nice ball to James Robinson on a wheel out of the backfield. Then the next rep, he hit A.T. Perry on a crossing route. It was a good anticipation throw. He put it out in front of him, let him run to it. It's a good opportunity for Yak if you were getting Yak in a practice. And then he had a nice ball up the seam on a skinny post to Stanley Morgan. I just thought he was really sharp today. It was also a funny moment. There was during individual drills, we're inside for this. We're all kind of standing there, kind of honestly just waiting for team drills to start, because you see all these individual drills, they all kind of blend together after a while. And I think at one point he was just seeing how many of us were paying attention, and he kind of just rifled a ball into where we were standing, the media. He may have been aiming directly for me, because if I hadn't moved, it would have hit me directly in the forehead. But it was just kind of a funny moment, because I'm pretty sure he did that intentionally to say, I'll see who's really paying attention.
But yeah, all this write-up stuff, y'all write about that now.
You're right. It was like a Hunger Games moment. It was weird. But, no, he had a solid day. I thought Spencer played well, too. And, this is a good time for them to be kind of rounding into form, because, that backup competition, I don't think it's settled yet. I think it's very much neck and neck. And it'll probably come down to this final preseason game. I don't know how much we'll see of Derek Carr, if we'll see him at all. So if you do end up going out there, I'd expect to see some starters. I would expect to see, Trevor Penning, Ole Udo, those guys as they're competing for that job, maybe some other first-team offensive linemen. But I wouldn't be surprised if you go out there with one of those two guys starting the game and the other guy finishing the game, and you really kind of weigh it from there. But no, it was a good day for Jake, and I think he's shown well the last couple of days.
We get it every day. Well, where's Mason Tipton? Okay, that's all y'all wanted to talk about during the trend. Okay, I can't bring him the Lord's to cure him, but he has been fighting an injury. But he has been doing some work now with Mason. So the thoughts, does he play Sunday? Or is this a decision similar to – I know you and I had this discussion on Rashid Shaheed. Because we never saw him in training camp, ever.
Kind of hit him.
Never saw him. And then all of a sudden he pops up on the scene. Will this be maybe a similar scenario with Tipton?
Well, if you recall, I mean, Rashid Shaheed did get cut. Right. So, you know, it's not like they're trying to hide it. They weren't trying to hide him to keep him on the roster. They may have been trying to hide him to sneak him onto the practice squad. I don't think that's what's happening with Mason. I mean, he's dealing with a hamstring injury. So, like, he wants to be out there. And I think for his chances to make the roster, it would be very beneficial for him to be out there on Sunday. Now, can he do it? That's the question. You know, we saw him getting some work in today, some individual work. But, you know, he didn't get into any team drills. He's still working his way back. This was the first day that I think we've seen him take that step. You know, he's been working off to the side with trainers previously. But no, I mean, that's the frustrating part of camp injuries, right? Because you're looking at it and saying, exactly. I think this guy has a legitimate shot to make the roster. But when you don't see it in a preseason game, when you don't see it on the field, you're kind of just having to guess. And how do you weigh that against some of these players who have been out there? You know, why do you weigh that against a guy like A.T. Perry, who he's kind of the opposite, where you see it all in the preseason games, but you don't necessarily see it in practice, right? So how do you balance those two things? I'm hopeful that Mason can get out there. And I think there's a couple guys on this roster who are kind of fighting through some things now for the exact reason of, I want to get out there and put some things on tape so I can point to them and say, this is why you need to keep me around. So we'll see. But no, I like Mason. I think he showed a lot over the first 2 weeks of camp. He just had a really unfortunate timed injury, and we'll see how that goes. But I do think one way or another, you want to keep him around. And, you know, maybe from the Saints' perspective, maybe this does help in terms of, you know, who's to say you were able to get him onto the practice squad previously. If he's unable to put anything on tape that other teams can actually see, what would they even be working off of if they're going for a waiver claim? So, no, I'm hopeful that even if he doesn't make the initial 53, that he's going to have a chance, much like you said, like Shaheed. I don't think got out there till week 6 of his rookie season to potentially be one of those, like, game day elevations, make some impacts, and make the roster that way.
Bobby and I were talking about this yesterday, so I'll get your opinion. I think the Saints keep 6 corners. Because if you look at it, everybody healthy, with Marshawn Lattimore, Paulson Adebo, Alante Taylor, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Ugo, because he is the nickel guy, and he can help you on special teams. So that's 5. Does Rico Payton become the 6th? Or do you go with Shamir? Because he's got some experience in this league. Man, that cornerback group, and I wouldn't have said this a year ago, but I think you may go with 6 this year.
Yeah, you know, the Kool-Aid injury really complicates that conversation to me in terms of, I don't know what your outlook is for him to get back for week 1, but you're sitting there not sure exactly where you are with Marshawn. At least I'm not sure with Marshawn and Kool-Aid. And suddenly your cornerback depth feels a lot different than it did going in, where I felt like he would be comfortable going with 4 guys and maybe loading up on an extra safety. Ugo's an interesting question because I kind of view him as more of a safety. So, like, if you're looking at him as a special teams contributor and that, like, you could throw him in the cornerback group. It's kind of weird. I do think you probably have to keep at least 5, you know, like, because you are unsure where you are with those injuries, right? And if Marshawn, for whatever reason, can't go week 1, who do you throw out there? Do you move Alante outside or do you keep him in the slot? I'd rather keep him in the slot if I can, because that's where he's been working. And that's where I feel like he needs to keep building confidence. Rico would probably be the next guy on that list. And a guy like, you know, Rajon Wright is in that conversation as well. Shamar John Charles. But 6 would be tough just because you know, it's a situation where, okay, we can keep 6 corners. Where are you getting where are you taking away from at another position? Are you losing a linebacker? And does that hurt you on special teams? Are you able to keep, are you now in a situation where you can only keep two quarterbacks instead of three? And you have to make a tough decision there. So, that's where, it's hard to have the depth conversation at individual positions without weighing it across the entire roster.
Yeah, because to me, six makes sense early because of the unknown with Lattimore, unknown with Kool-Aid.
Yeah, and I mean, it is a situation where you do have practice squad elevation, so you don't necessarily have to keep all of the corners that you might want to play week one, right? So that is a factor, and this team has not been shy about using those practice squad elevations as they need them. Jonathan Abram started on the practice squad last year. They called him up three times and then signed him, right? I think they did that with Kenny Stills a couple years ago at the wide receiver position. So they do understand, especially when it comes to those kind of, you get four spots in the practice squad for veteran players. And so, is that a situation they look at again? Do you do the same thing you did last year with Jonathan Abram, right? I think that's a conversation, but no, I do think that you look at this cornerback depth and you feel a lot different about it because of those injuries. And Kool-Aid, anytime you're dealing with a knee thing, you don't want to mess with it, right? Like you don't want to have a rookie in his first NFL game fighting through an injury that he could, worsen, right? So I think they're going to be extra careful with him in that regard. They're not going to rush him back. I wouldn't be surprised if you do keep six to answer your question.
Jeff, hopping to the offensive line, it's good. Some good news today with Taliese Fuaga returning to practice. I mean, how did he look? How many reps did he get? And then, kind of an early projection on if he's going to be playing and getting some reps in preseason game number three.
Yeah, he didn't look limited, right? Like you didn't see a guy laboring. And if he was still fighting that back injury, kind of like Kool-Aid, I don't think you're pushing it with a rookie at this point, especially for practice, for a midweek practice. So the fact that you're able to get him in today, 4 days ahead of the preseason game, is a good sign. I didn't see any issues from him at the left tackle spot. I think you do want to get him out there on Sunday if you can, because, he's a guy you're relying on week one of the season to start a left tackle, and he didn't get to play in week two of the preseason. So if you can get him more reps, you definitely want to. The other question is, okay, how much do you play Ole Udo? How much do you play Trevor Penning? Landon Young got some work at left guard today with working in with Lucas Patrick. Lucas left yesterday early with some cramps. I don't think that's anything significant, but I think by my count, we've seen six different players take first team reps at left guard. That might be the most I've ever seen of any individual starting offensive line spot. And you see, you're talking about Nick Saldivari, Shane Lemieux got work there, Lucas Patrick, Kyle Hergel, Ole Udo, and Landon Young. So, there's definitely a lot of question marks still at this point on the offensive line. And to me, that's concerning, right? I think at this point in the preseason, you'd really like to have that group locked in. And I think you do have that with three spots, right? You have that left tackle, you have that at center, and you have that at right guard. But two of those spots are, in my opinion, still completely up in the air. So it's going to be interesting to see how they land on that. I still think you're going to go with Trevor week one. But, getting Ole Udo these reps now, to me, is kind of a sign that this is a team that wants to be prepared to make a change if they see a situation where it's like, we can't go this route any longer, right? So we'll see how that goes.
I think it does affect, too, if Lucas Patrick is your left guard, and I think there's some indication that's what you may do early, then who's your backup center? Because now, because when you brought in Lucas – okay, he might have been a swing guy in that sixth spot, but also he was going to be the backup center.
Right.
Now you're really retooling things if something would happen to Eric McCoy. Now people say, oh, Sam Marbitt's saying that. No, you better run that through your head.
Be prepared for it.
Because offensive linemen get hurt more than any other position on the field, and you better be prepared for it. One of the things Bob and I talked off the end, and we talked about it before we got Jeff Duncan yesterday, was, Mike, how many guys you think? I said, man, three at the least. I think four is probably maybe some moves they'll make. Jeff was, I think four is the minimum. I think it's maybe five or more moves this team makes before the start of the season, either waivers or sign a free agent or in a trade. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the injuries, right? Sincere Haynesworth, you know, he, I mean, that's not a situation he could have avoided. He's blocking, the defender rolls into his left knee. I think it was an MCL injury. Now he's waived with an injury designation, so he's no longer there. That knocks away a guy that maybe you could take a look at as your backup center. But, no, I agree. I think the plan going into this offseason was, hey, Lucas can be kind of that swing backup on the inside, with Landon Young being that swing backup on the outside, right? You could have Lucas Patrick potentially be your backup at three different positions, at center, right guard, and left guard. Now, if he's your starting right guard, or it's your starting left guard, yeah, who's your backup center? You could say it's Cesar Ruiz. The guy's done it in the past. But I think the offensive line group is just a little, I don't know. I don't think they like the idea of having to change multiple positions when one guy goes out, right? Like, you want to be able to make that change with one guy. And if Eric McCoy gets hurt and then suddenly you're replacing the center with a backup and the right guard with a backup, that's just poor planning. So you do have to figure something out. Shane Lemieux would be a guy that I'd say, hey, he's an option, but based on what we saw against the 49ers,
not a good one.
That's something that you like.
At this stage.
Some of those snaps were rough.
Yeah.
I think he might be your backup right guard. He might be a guy that you keep around as an interior backup, but I just don't see how you can go in and say, oh, yeah, we feel comfortable with him as our backup center. So, no, hey, Kyle Hergel's a guy that we've seen get snaps at left guard. We haven't seen him work at center, although he can play center. It's just not a route that they've gone with him yet, and probably because he's a UDFA, you're just trying to get him comfortable at his main position. You're not trying to ask him to do too much. But no, I think you are going to make moves, right? And it's going to depend on, you know, who's available on the waiver wire. You know, are you throwing guys on the practice squad and taking care of some of your depth issues that way? When I talked to John Benton earlier in camp, you know, he basically said, we want to be able to go nine deep with players that, you know, we're comfortable playing, not just guys you have on the roster. And you look at this kind of group, and I don't think you can get to nine with players that you want to put on the field.
No, right? I agree with that.
There's definitely going to be some openings available, and it's just a matter of where you look at it. There's so many question marks. I'm currently trying to figure out what I'm going to send Jeff Duncan, because he does his media survey every year of what's your record prediction?
Yeah, I sent mine already. I wasn't going to change off a preseason game.
Well, I am not changing it off a preseason game, but when I did my initial projection off of the schedule coming out, I had him at 10 wins, right? And what I've seen from the offensive line is kind of really, really driving me to put that number down at least one win, maybe two. And because I think that's what it costs you. It costs you confidence.
Yes,
it costs
it
you the ability to say, we're going to be able to do this on offense because we can trust the protection's going to be there. If you can't trust the protection, then you just don't know what you'll be able to do on offense, because if you're going against a team with an elite pass rush, they could blow up the game on you, and then suddenly it's like, okay, can we win 12-10? That's a tough scenario. You did it back in 2019 when Teddy Bridgewater was starting, but that's not a high percentage scenario. So we'll see how it goes. But I think that offensive line position, if this season goes badly, if this season really goes off the rails, it's going to be because you can't protect the quarterback.
I agree 200% on that. Final question for you, Jeff. Over and under on how many times during the game we're going to hear about Tajay Spears. I put it at 3.5, and I'm going to take the over on that.
Slam the over, Mike.
On that deal.
Oh.
But the Kendra Miller situation, this looks to me like, man, you just hear the tone of your head coach, and it's not good that they're going to put him injured reserve, whatever, and just try to figure it out later. You don't know what you have in Kendra Miller at this stage, other than the fact he can't stay on the field. And they're going to be linked in time until both of them are out of the league. Tajay Spears, Kendra Miller. I would throw the A-chain in there, too, because he was there when the Saints picked, too. But whatever. It's always going to be the local guy going up against what happened with Kendra Miller. What do you think happens with Kendra?
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, hindsight, you look at it and you say, man, it would be nice if they just went the kind of fan favorite route anyway, because that would have been the easy choice, right? Get the local guy in. And it sounds like that would have worked out to their benefit if they had done that. You know, I think it was a scouting thing, and they felt like this Kendra was the prospect that fit what they wanted to do. Now, here's the thing. It's a different offense now. So who's to say that Kendra, his skill set, fits better than some of these other guys who, you know, not necessarily guys who were drafted by that kind of old regime in terms of that old offensive scheme. You know, Dennis Allen has not. I wouldn't say he's done the best job in the world of veiling his frustration when it comes to Kendre and his inability to get on the field. And you know, it's really just a matter of he's being honest about the situation. And a lot of coaches would probably couch it in more coach speak than he did. But basically, it's like, we don't know what we have in Kendre Miller because we have not been able to see Kendre Miller on the field. And, you know, we're not talking about, oh, okay, well, he learned the offense last year, so he can just step right in. You know, one of the reasons I think he's going to land on IR is because even if he's a guy who you look at and you say, oh, he'll be ready to play by week three, I don't think they'll be comfortable playing him in week three because from the time he gets back, then he will have to ramp into actually working in the offense and learning the protections and repping the protections and doing stuff like that. So, like, I think it's a situation where whenever he does get back, you're going to have to go through all of that process with him in real time in live action. So that's just frustrating. And you're talking about devoting a roster spot to a guy. There's other guys who have been here competing, right? And how do you manage that? So, no, it's definitely a frustrating situation, right? And I think it's frustrating for people who would much rather be rooting for Tajay Spears in the first place. It's frustrating for the coaching staff. It's frustrating for the offensive coordinator who's installing a scheme and trying to figure out what he has in a young running back. And it's frustrating for a position group that is littered with older players, right? You're talking about Alvin Kamara, Jamal Williams. You'd really like to say, hey, we have kind of a new guard that'll be ready to take over when these guys, you know, start to fall off or if they have already, and you've seen that over the last few years. You can't confidently say that with the young running back in the room. So, you know, I think some people would look at it and say DA needs to chill on some of the brutal honesty when it comes to the injury situations for Kendre. But I think you also look at a guy that, you know, we heard early on that this was a frustration that we're talking about. Hey, you got to figure it out, right? You got to do the work. You got to do the prehab. You got to do whatever. Deuce has been talking about it for months.
Yep.
And then to see this play out the way it did, and to know that background, that there was already a level of frustration going in, it's not hard to see. It's not hard to kind of read between the lines and understand that this is not a healthy situation right now, no pun intended. So we'll see how that goes. Like you said, I think he is going to be an IR candidate to start the season, and we'll figure it out. But right now it's Jordan Mims' season, and we're going to have to see what he has to offer.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate it. One last note to finish this off. If you think Dennis Allen was frustrated, he lucky wasn't here when Sean Payton was here. Sean would have blew the cork big time on Kendre Miller. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time, insights, buddy. Thank you.
Sure, y'all have a good one.
All righty. Jeff Nowak, our Saints sideline reporter, also at WWL. He's our digital content producer. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettillo along with Charlie Long. I want to thank Jeff Nowak spending 22 minutes with us talking about the Saints and their practice sessions. One of the things he brought up and I'll ask him about was certainly with Kendre Miller. And I think with the Saints, they were trying to find an explosive back, a guy that could cut the corner, catch the football coming out of the backfield. And he might be able to do that. Question is, can he stay on the field? And the answer right now after two seasons is no. He has not been able to do it. And, man, that puts the coach in a bad spot. It's almost like if you part of the 4x400-meter relay team and they put the baton in your hand and you drop it.
Yeah, you either drop it or you stumble as soon as you get it. And as far as Kendre Miller goes, DA's quote on him from yesterday, quote, I know he's talented, but I don't know if he can learn the system. I don't know if he can pick up the system because I haven't seen him out there. He's just being brutally honest, Mike. Kendre Miller injured on day one of practice, which, you know, we're still counting, by the way, is 2 days away from being a month ago, a full month, with his injured hamstring.
I remember, Charlie, we had Deuce on with us the day of the final practice sessions, the OTAs.
Yeah.
And his deal was, when I asked him about Kendre Miller, he said, Mike, can he get himself ready for 17-game schedule?
The answer is no.
And so far?
So far.
Answer has been no. But you see the talent in him because he flashes it. But, man, you can't keep him on the field.
Yeah, there's a reason you spent a third-round pick on him. You wanted to pass the torch to him at some point. But at the same time, you just haven't been able to see anything from him. And that's been the most disappointing part about it. And, you know, you don't want to pile on the kid by any stretch of the imagination, but it has been really disappointing. just that he has not been able to be out there, and we haven't been able to highlight him as one of those players that has stepped up in the running back room. The running back room is still a big question mark on this team. You know, we didn't really bring it up with Jeff, but you're hoping Jordan Mims can work out. But Jordan Mims was an undrafted free agent in 2023. He spent time on the practice squad last year.
He's a solid guy.
He's a solid player, but you were hoping that your third-round pick, a guy you spent a top 100 pick on, would pan out. And so far, Kendra Miller just hasn't.
You want a guy that can hit the home run shot. You really do. And right now, he can't get even up to bat because of the injuries. We'll be back to finish it off here in our number one of Sports Talk right here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We had a texter ask, well, what did Devon Achan do last year? Well, he rushed for 800 yards. He averaged 7.8 yards a carry, scored 8 rushing touchdowns, and he caught 27 passes coming out of the backfield.
Was it the Broncos game that he just went absolutely
went off.
Ridiculous? Yeah, no, just go look at that tape if you want to know what Devon Achane
yeah,
can do.
And so, again, he's a perfect fit now for what the Dolphins do.
Easily.
And they rotate a lot of their backs anyway. So, man, he turned out to be a pretty good pick for the Dolphins. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. I want to thank Jeff Nowak spending 22 minutes with us talking about the Saints and their practice sessions. One of the things he brought up and I'll ask him about was certainly with Kendra Miller. And I think with the Saints, they were trying to find an explosive back, a guy that could cut the corner, catch the football coming out of the backfield. And he might be able to do that. Question is, can he stay on the field? And the answer right now after two seasons is no. He has not been able to do it, and, man, that puts the coach in a bad spot. It's almost like if you part of the football 400-meter relay team and they put the baton in your hand and you drop it.
Yeah, you either drop it or you stumble as soon as you get it. And as far as Kendra Miller goes, DA's quote on him from yesterday, quote, I know he's talented, but I don't know if he can learn the system. I don't know if he can pick up the system because I haven't seen him out there. He's just being brutally honest, Mike. Kendra Miller injured on day one of practice, which, you know, we're still counting, by the way, is 2 days away from being a month ago, a full month, with his injured hamstring.
I remember, Charlie, we had Deuce on with us the day of the final practice sessions, the OTAs.
Yeah.
And his deal was, when I asked him about Kendra Miller, he said, Mike, can he get himself ready for 17-game schedule?
The answer is no.
And so far?
So far.
Answer has been no. But you see the talent in him because he flashes it, but, man, you can't keep him on the field.
Yeah, there's a reason you spent a third-round pick on him. You wanted to pass the torch to him at some point, but at the same time, you just haven't been able to see anything from him, and that's been the most disappointing part about it. And, you know, you don't want to pile on the kid by any stretch of the imagination, but it has been really disappointing. Just that he has not been able to be out there, and we haven't been able to highlight him as one of those players that has stepped up in the running back room. The running back room is still a big question mark on this team. You know, we didn't really bring it up with Jeff, but you're hoping Jordan Mims can work out. But Jordan Mims was an undrafted free agent in 2023. He spent time on the practice squad last year.
He's a solid guy.
He's a solid player, but you were hoping that your third-round pick, a guy you spent a top 100 pick on, would pan out. And so far, Kendra Miller just hasn't.
You want a guy that can hit the home run shot. You really do. And right now, he can't get even up to bat because of the injuries. We'll be back to finish it off here in our number one of Sports Talk right here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We had a texter ask, well, what did Devon Achane do last year? Well, he rushed for 800 yards. He averaged 7.8 yards a carry, scored 8 rushing touchdowns, and he caught 27 passes coming out of the backfield.
Was it the Broncos game that he just went
he
absolutely
went off.
Ridiculous? Yeah, no, just go look at that tape if you want to know what Devon Achane
yeah,
can do.
And so, again, he's a perfect fit now for what the Dolphins do.
Easily.
And they rotate a lot of their backs anyway. So, man, he turned out to be a pretty good pick for the Dolphins. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.